Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's July the 13th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss today's cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau and talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt. He'll join us just after the bottom of the hour to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. One other note, Dave Dickey and I are counting down here, and it means a bit less to you than us, but just as a reminder, we'll both be out of the office over the next couple of weeks. I'll be on assignment with Extension in Ukraine. Wish me luck there, as the political wheels are turning in a battle between the East and the West. Dave Dickey will be in New Orleans next week on a mission trip with a youth group for the Katrina victims. He'll return for a couple of days on the air and then take some more time off for seminary. Dave is working, of course, towards his doctorate. We wish him the best of luck as well. The ag programming on the station? Well, that'll march forward under the steady guide of the staff here at WILL, and the web programming in part from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences staff. My sincere thank you to all of them. It is my trip overseas that has made their work more difficult, and I know that. Now, on with the CMR, the Closing Market Report.
Did you miss the Closing Market Report or some of our other agricultural programming? We've got the answer. You can get all our AM 580 agricultural shows delivered daily directly to your computer. Just go to our website, willag.org, and look for the headline, subscribe to AM 580 Ag Podcast. Follow the simple steps, and you'll never miss an ag broadcast again. From the pre-opening and opening ag reports to the closing market report to Commodity Week, all delivered to your computer when you need it. Head on over to willag.org and put the AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts to work for you.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. July wheat down 14 cents at 376. September's at 395 and a half off 19. July wheat in Kansas City off 24 today at $4.85. July corn futures in Chicago, 252 and a half. They were off 6 3/4. September's were down 8 at 260 and a quarter. And December contract at 276, down 8 cents. March futures, 287 and a quarter, off 7 and a half for the day. July soybean futures, 597 and a half, down 5 and a half. The August at 6 3/4 lower, $6 and a quarter cent the settlement price there. September futures in the bean pit at 607 and 3/4, down 7. And November soybeans, $6.22, were off 7 and a half for the day. Bean meal futures July contract off $2.50 at 171. Bean oil July at 27.10. They finished down 0.07 for the day. Feeder cattle August contract off up 92.5 cents at 114.65, and the August live cattle at 84.60 were 70 cents higher. July futures on the lean hogs in the Mercantile Exchange quarter higher at $70.82.5. Outside markets for the day: crude oil $76.65, the current trade up $1.70. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 10,843 is down 160.8 points at this hour. And the August gold trading $654.80 is up $3.60.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois, away today. Dale Durkle's joining us in his stead. Good afternoon. Good to talk to you again, Dale.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's talk about this marketplace. A lot of rainfall across the Midwest and in some of the Great Plains states. I suppose it was the wheat that led things lower today, but the rain sure makes grain, and I think a lot of producers think that this one was very helpful.
Well, it depends on where you were at. I mean, some people that were in some places that didn't get too much rain and won't think it's helpful. But, you know, at least when you look at the kind of thing that unfolded here today, some rains up in the northern plains especially, and the concern we've had of recent anyways for the spring wheat crop up in there really broke the back of the market there in the wheat. And I think you know, was the key ingredient to probably put everything under the extreme pressure that we saw today. Not that corn and soybeans didn't deserve to be lower after having some good rains, and still, you know, here in the short term, chances of maybe some showers even through tomorrow.
And then as you take a look at the charts, what do you think of the marketplace as we head into the harvest season? I know that you and Dan have been really thinking that the market will continue to march higher, although there are ups and downs along the way.
You know, one thing that I've said, and I think even he's said all along, is that this is going to be a volatile game now, especially with all the outside money that we have in the mix at this fold. And I think that's going to probably bear out and prove true. You know, you really look at corn and beans in particular, and even wheat. As you take a look at it, Minneapolis wheat from bottom to top, we'd had basically a dollar rally, you know, and you're sitting there going, you know, it's due for a correction. The soybean market, we'd put in basically 50 cents, and that arguably is fundamentally the weakest market. In the corn market, we put in over 30 cents in the rally here since those late June lows. And, you know, so I think the rain itself really being a catalyst probably set off a wave of profit-taking in the market today. Anybody had been long said, hey, you know, let's just stand back of this thing. We've got some weather uncertainty to deal with right now. But to be blunt, with cycle lows in corn and probably beans here just a couple of weeks ago, I don't see anything in the mix at this juncture yet that says we've seen a cycle peak yet either.
That was my next question. Actually, I was thinking that we might be looking at some correction, and have we gone down far enough, or how much further down before you think we might start the next uptrend?
No, I don't think we've really gone down far enough itself. You know, the December contract closed today at 276. I could argue maybe it's going to come back down in somewhere around the 270 mark. It's a possibility. I really wouldn't want to totally say it couldn't even slip into the high 260s themselves. When you look over at the bean market, the November settling out today at 622, you got a whole host of moving averages here, and you also got an up gap when you look at the charts, the day charts in particular, but you start working anywhere from about 620 and extend all the way down to roughly about 613. So we could take another dime out of this thing on the downside yet. And I could feasibly argue in beans in particular, we could go all the way back to those late June lows before we start building the potential for another move up once more.
And that would be down what, below?
Well, that's down somewhere around 592, 593 on November.
On the Nov, sure. I was looking at the late option month.
Right.
So you're not convinced, though. Let me turn that around. You and Dan are both convinced that this market still needs to go higher. Is that right?
Well, I haven't seen anything yet that hasn't changed that opinion. Let's put it that way. You know, as you get into this part of the year, especially in the grain markets themselves, and with production the dominant feature of the market at this point, you've always got to be on guard. Is there something that's shifting, something that's changing fundamentally and or technically, I use both, that really dictates that you need to go from having a positive attitude to a more negative attitude in the market, you know, with prices themselves. You know, yeah, the market was in need of a much overdue correction after the kind of runs that we've had in here, wheat even in that mix. And so, you know, what we've seen here today, I don't know that I can express anything real negative out of. It's just kind of maybe heightened your concern a little bit, as you always have as you go through the summer months and you see rains and you see markets turn down. Is this really a market that's getting ready to turn down and be weak all the way into the fall? I can go back. I remember one year back in 1986, we had beans, though, rally up into roughly around 4th of July. We had a dollar break into August, had a dollar rally into Labor Day, had a bit of a break into the fall months, and we basically traded from about a $6.50 bottom to about a $7.50 top through that whole period, and really never did set up a quote-unquote bear market. And in fact, then on into 77, we went to $10. You know, so a lot isn't known yet, and just as people more recently can remember what happened with the crops back in the fall of 2003. August dried out, and it hurt yields on corn and especially hurt yields on beans along with the aphids. And so, you know, neither crop, a great yield is certainly in the bin, and even as we go to the end of July, a great crop isn't necessarily in the bin.
When you take a look out at the November beans, can you see it anytime soon topping out above, I think, what its current contract high is at 660, is that right, I think?
Yeah, so. Contract high right now is 660, and there's another interim high along in there at about 6.5, too, that the market will have to deal with. I think, you know, to get up over top of that's probably going to be somewhere out there in the month of August at the soonest. So, you know, I don't see any time here soon necessarily, especially given the rains that we've had here this week. But, you know, even though we had good rains here, and, you know, when you look at the moisture maps for the state of Illinois, there still is, to a certain degree, some banding. In other words, you had large areas of Illinois that didn't get a whole lot of rain and large areas of Iowa that didn't get a whole lot of rain. So, you know, you always have to be careful in reading too much into the rain if you happen to be setting in a more fortunate place.
Even with or without the rain, things still set up fairly good as we get into next spring in terms of under a normal crop condition for at least corn, that there would be not a burdensome supply at the end of that crop year or marketing year, and that usage should be awfully good.
Oh, that's, you know, that's certainly a truth at this point, and that, you know, as you look at things on the corn side of the equation, and I think, you know, the USDA supply-demand balance, you know, that they put out here this week was probably notable. And, yeah, they did raise the size of the crop because of the change in acreage. But in doing so, even having a larger production estimate for the new crop because of the acreage, we still ended up with a smaller ending stock for next year. And I think, you know, the one thing people just have not readily come to grip with yet totally is just the demand base we've got in the long term. I do know that there are a lot of people that think the USDA yield number at 149 is probably still a little bit small, that maybe we ought to be up in the low, and a few people want to think even the mid-150s right now on corn yields, but I think it's a little bit early to get that adventuresome yet.
Let me go back to that report, by the way. USDA hasn't made an official and won't make an official estimate of crop size until August. That's right.
That's right.
You can go back and back figure, and I think it's, what, 10.74 billion bushels, is that right?
Yeah. Okay. The one they put out just this week?
Yeah.
Right, they're using 10.774.
Okay. And at that rate, that's not a very big crop compared to the last couple, 2 or 3 years.
Well, we were over 11 billion bushel last year, and well above 11 billion bushel as we were 2 years ago. So, I mean, we're really working with a moderate crop. But, you know, the thing we got to note in here is that this year we're dealing still, even though they raised the acreage estimate, we're dealing with about 3 million less harvested acres probably than what we had a year ago.
Let's turn our attention very quickly to the Mercantile Exchange. Talk a little bit about that before I let you go for the day.
The Merc itself, I think, playing into the mix here at this point is, you know, we've got some heat coming in over the weekend. We got moisture around in some areas now, and I think people are just a little bit anxious at this juncture anyway that heat and humidity could actually slow gains in terms of livestock down a little bit. Hogs in particular, cash markets at a premium to futures, and especially the August contract. So I think, you know, with ideas that, you know, cash prices, at least for now, might be at an equitable level, probably has having a lot of people that have been on the short side of hogs in particular say, you know, let's step out of these short positions right now and kind of get a better sense of where this cash market's going, especially with some heat and humidity ahead of us now. So I think really short covering was probably the big event as you step over into the hog pits themselves. When you look at cattle, you know, I don't know. You know, at this point, we'd had a pretty hard break this week. We really didn't do anything wholly, really bullish in the market on Thursday necessarily. So I still kind of ally this as to really being a short covering event. And I'm not quite as optimistic or hopeful that cattle market, cattle futures in particular, can continue to move upwards because they're carrying a bit of a premium to the cash market, and I think that's a little bit counterproductive.
And finally, to summarize, am I right that this week's reports and the rainfall really hasn't changed your mind about the direction for corn and soybeans?
No, I don't think so. And, you know, actually, when you look at the percent of normal over the last 7 days, like I say, there was a band through central Illinois, then you go into east central Illinois, southern Illinois, and there was a band through central Iowa, but you get out of that, and there was huge areas that really didn't get much rain this week. And so I don't think it changes the overall complexion a whole lot unless the weather pattern itself in the future really changes.
Thanks much, Dale.
Bye.
Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, joining us on a Thursday afternoon here on the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
Well, at the bottom of the hour, agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM 580's own Ed Kieser forecast for tonight across the two-state region calls for mostly cloudy skies, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Patchy, dense fog will form, lows ranging from 65 in northeastern Indiana to 73 in southwestern Illinois. Tomorrow, Ed says, mostly cloudy skies, widespread showers and thunderstorms, highs tomorrow between 83 and 90. The wind speeds 5 to 10 miles an hour, the minimum afternoon relative humidities ranging between 50 and 65%. The extended forecast, hot and humid weather expected through the weekend and much of next week. High temperatures Saturday through at least the middle of next week will mostly be in the 90s and the lows mostly in the 70s. The heat combined with the high humidity will lead to afternoon heat index values exceeding 100 degrees in most locations over the weekend and next week.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochka says there is a recent event property owners need to mark and potentially take action on.
Anniversaries are often joyous occasions that celebrate a special personal event, such as a marriage. Others are sobering reminders of a day or event in national or world history, such as the D-Day invasion that occurred 62 years ago this month. Another kind of anniversary marks an event that is neither of the categories just listed, but deserves some consideration nonetheless. It has been a year since the U.S. Supreme Court infamous decision regarding private property rights. The Supreme Court ruled in Kelo versus City of New London that cities and towns may use eminent domain proceedings to take unblighted land from one individual and turn it over to a new set of owners in the name of economic development. The court ruled this type of land taking could occur even if there is only a mere possibility the new owners would boost local tax revenues or the number of jobs in the community when they redevelop the property. In other words, in the eyes of the federal government, eminent domain is no longer reserved to take land that will become interstate highways, hospitals, airports, or similar public works. While these kinds of projects have undoubtedly hurt many farmers and other property owners over the years, they also are projects that clearly benefit the public at large. But the Kelo decision upends the traditional use of eminent domain by establishing that land can be taken and turned over for private economic gain, new office buildings in the case of New London. If there is a silver lining in the High Court's Kelo ruling, it is the property rights movement that has arisen in the meantime. A survey released by the American Farm Bureau Federation showed Americans are unified nearly 2-1 against government use of eminent domain to take private property, except in limited circumstances, regardless of geographical, partisan, or other demographic differences. Likewise, 83% of Americans oppose the use of eminent domain to further private development initiatives. Other polls show similar levels of opposition. Perhaps as a result, state legislators have shown considerable interest in fleshing out what the ruling could mean to their citizens. While all the legislative activity to migrate the effects of Kelo is worth commending, supporters of private property rights wish their efforts were unnecessary in the first place. But given the situation facing them just 1 year ago, it is appropriate to consider raising a toast to mark the state-level successes to overcome the effects of Kelo on the first anniversary of that infamous Supreme Court ruling. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call at 217-333-0850.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing, located at the Elevator in Lexington, joins us on this Thursday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
You should have been in an area where rain fell over the last couple of days. Was that the case?
Oh, yeah, just beautiful rains right here. Now, of course, not completely universal. As you go north and west, there were some areas that didn't get as much. But for the most part, in general, we got some. We're in good shape up here.
And farmers happy with those rainfall, with that rainfall, and then still happy, I suppose, about the potential for cash prices?
Yeah, I think that kind of like Christmas in July there for a couple of days when we got an inch of rain each day and the markets were up as well. But, you know, we're down today, not a terrible move down. We're still 10 cents higher tonight on our cash price than we were last Friday, so still a pretty good week on the corn and only about 5 or 6 cents lower on beans.
You know, I don't know that I have a good handle on which direction you think the market will be headed through harvest and then maybe into December. I'm quite certain that you're positive after that. But
yeah, right. I guess I think there's a good chance that we can have lower prices between now and, say, January 1st. You've got to respect the market, and you've got to respect the inflation thing and the money flow into the market. But just looking at it from a cash fundamental standpoint, as we get into October, we're going to have a lot of bushels on hand. And you have to be realistic, I believe, that these rains this week, although I realize there's parts of Illinois, good part of Illinois, and a big part of Iowa that didn't get these rains. But in reality, you know, the crop improved this week with these rains in the, you know, coming in the middle of pollination.
You could see it each and every day as tassels came out and silk started to grow. Corn just grows at an amazing rate.
And we saw some cash movement there, especially on Tuesday and Wednesday after some of the rains hit. I mean, the farmer a lot of times has a tendency to would like to see, you know, that rain before he goes ahead and makes his sales. So it worked out good from that standpoint.
Yeah, farmers had been rewarding the market, and I think that the basis had been a little bit stronger over the last few days. And then with the rainfall, how might that change the way basis reacts over the next month? Will it widen out based on the idea that these elevators won't want old crop corn coming in because they're looking at a better crop in certain areas?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're right. The bases, especially at the processor on corn got and beans, got better this week. I think as we move into the fall period or towards harvest, closer to harvest, we could see the bases widen, assuming that we, you know, continue to see a good crop coming at us.
And your bids for the day?
225 for old corn, 238 for new, 566 old beans, 582 new.
We thank you much.
Thanks, Don.
Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing. He's located at the Elevator in Lexington, Illinois. In about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. The former head of Illinois' Historic Preservation Agency contends he lost his job for refusing an order to fire Republican employees. A lawsuit filed today by Maynard Crossland claims aides to Governor Rob Blagojevich came to his office in 2003 with a chart indicating who the governor wanted fired. Crossland says he was told the employees should be let go because they were Republicans, even though their jobs were protected from political firing. No comment yet from the governor's office. Governor Rob Blagojevich has a new plan to cut down on the thousands of Illinoisans who die each year because of medical mistakes. The governor's proposals for reducing medical errors would have all doctors within 5 years use computerized prescriptions to avoid medicine mix-ups and save time and money. He wants to create a new patient safety division within the State Department of Public Health to focus on reducing mistakes and developing standardized medication practices. Fog kept Republican gubernatorial candidate Judy Barr Topinka from making a campaign appearance in Urbana this morning. Topinka is making campaign stops around the state to promote her job creation plan. It includes reorganizing the State Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. Topinka says the agency's current structure is one reason why Illinois lost out to Indiana in the competition to host a new Honda assembly plant. She proposes moving parts of DCEO to a new 15-member panel of appointed business leaders. Topinka says that's similar to how Indiana organizes its economic development efforts. An Indiana state legislator wants to put limits on the pay that county sheriffs can receive in that state. Republican Representative Lawrence Buell says salaries should be limited to around $110,000. Marion County Sheriff Frank Anderson made more than $700,000 in tax collection fees over the past 4 years. The application forms are now ready for Champaign residents interested in the vacant at-large seat on the Champaign City Council. The City Council will take applications until August 1st for the seat left vacant by Kathy Ennin's resignation. The applications are available at the Mayor's Office in the Champaign City Building and on the City website under the City Council section. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon, joined now by Peter Levitt to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's go over and recap what's happened over the last several days. How much rainfall, where, and how much help will it be for the crop in the Midwest?
Well, we have seen some rain fall across parts of the Iowa, principally, amounts half to 1.5 inches here and there, and then some of it spread eastward and southeastward through parts of central southern Illinois and over into the eastern Corn Belt. These amounts are good for a few days' worth of moisture. The areas we're most concerned about, of course, the western Corn Belt, need to get a lot more of these type of systems before they're anywhere near out of the woods. And my feeling is that it only provided a few days of relief for that part of the belt.
Are we worried at all about heat across those areas?
Yeah, we are, especially as the western Corn Belt. The pattern we've been in, extraordinary persistent pattern, has the focus of heat in the Great Plains from Nebraska northward through the Dakotas and then eastward into Minnesota and northern Iowa now. And this is an important portion of the Corn Belt and is subject to hot weather. And after today's episode of showers moving across Iowa later today and tonight, we're going to see dry weather starting tomorrow and going right through the weekend and into most of next week. So that area looks to be dry, and along with the dryness, there'll be some heat. Now, as far as the eastern Corn Belt is concerned, from Illinois on eastward, we are finally going to see a hot weekend here. We've got some showers coming across Iowa later today and tonight, and that'll combine and move southeastward to cover parts of southern Illinois. I think most of the activity will be south of the Champaign area later today and tonight. Tomorrow, a new front forms to the north and stays to the north through most of next week, and this means that we'll have a chance to see some high temperatures and absence of any significant precipitation. So finally look for that period of heat beginning Saturday, going through most of next week, with temperatures getting into the mid-90s and maybe a few upper 90s in central and southern Illinois during that period.
Pete, we appreciate you being with us today.
My pleasure.
Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the closing market report on Thursday afternoons. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning for our pre-opening market report at 8:49 and to check our website at willag.org. You can catch up on all the latest USDA reports there. Pick up our podcast MP3 files if you'd like to listen to something from the closing, the opening, or the pre-opening market report or commodity week. It's all there at willag.org. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.